I want to point out something to you. There's, you know, the government and BP are trying to convince us that this thing is over, but we've heard from the Lord. It ain't over. In fact, the worst part is now coming. I'd like to read a couple of really quick articles here. Well, this is concerning, this first article I'm going to read to you is concerning how that, well, actually, I've got two articles. I'm just going to read one of them. One of them is from the McClatchy News Service, and the other one is from the Miami Herald. And both of them basically say that the science world is skeptical of the oil claims that are being put on over the national news. This first one says, science world skeptical at oil spills disappearing act. Yeah, I am too. It's still there. It hasn't gone anywhere. As BP prepares to shoot cement into the ruptured well, experts are suspicious of claims that much of the spill is gone. This is the McClatchy News Service from Washington. Many scientists say they're skeptical of a widely publicized government report Wednesday that concludes much of the oil that gushed from BP's leaking well is gone and poses little threat to the Gulf of Mexico. Well, they never admitted that it was there in the first place, right? The only thing they admitted is what's on top. According to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the vast majority of the 4.9 million barrels released into the Gulf has either evaporated or been burned, skimmed, and recovered from the wellhead or dispersed. Quote, I'm suspect if that's accurate or not, unquote, said Ronald Kendall, the director of the Institute of Environmental and Human Health at Texas Tech University, and one of the scientists who testified Wednesday at a congressional hearing about the need for more research into the composition and use of chemical dispersants to break up the oil in the Gulf. Quote, it's an estimate, and I'd like to say that even if it's true, there are still 50 to 60 million gallons that are still out there, he said. It's too early to draw the conclusion that the coast is clear, but there are species there that will tell us this. That's true, and they are doing it. The Fox News Network just had a show concerning a big fish gill out in the Gulf. They said thousands, but as they panned across the horizon there, it looked to me like millions of fish were out there. The interesting thing was they took a picture the next day, and there was nothing there. They were all gone. And they said something like, I wonder if the sharks moved in and caught them. But I got a sneaking hunch that it wasn't the sharks at all. It was the skimmers that moved in and skimmed them right off the top, just like they'd been doing the oil. And I'm sure they had orders to do that. That's the only way they could have disappeared that quickly. But at any rate, there are species out there that will tell us if this is the truth. And we just heard from that big fish kill that it wasn't the truth. In matter of fact, on that same program, there was a man there that was representing some of the fishermen there, and they were asking, Fox News people were asking, well, do they believe that these fish are safe to eat? And the man said no. Now, if anybody wants you to eat fish, it would be these fishermen, but they're saying no. They don't believe that they're safe to eat. Well, the government and BP are certainly wanting you to think they're okay to eat, but those dead ones died from something. The White House used the report to boost public confidence that the accident at BP's drilling site, which killed 11 workers and fouled the Gulf, killed wildlife and disrupted the regional economies from Texas to Florida, is now behind the nation. It followed a more critical milestone Wednesday with BP executing a static kill to choke the once-raging well with heavy drilling mud. Yep, they did that. That was Wednesday. Thad Allen, who has the National incident commander directed the BP cleanup, gave the company the go-ahead to cement the well from the top, which was done. A step that will be followed, as you know, has already been done or working on it. A relief well expected to cut into the well 2.5 miles below the sea floor. Listen to this, folks, and this is interesting. I didn't know exactly how far until now, 2.5 miles below the sea floor. Well, that well doesn't actually poke into the reservoir until 5 miles. So basically, if they're not going to pump the concrete at the bottom of the well, which they can't, they would be going into the reservoir to do that, and that's not possible for them to be able to pump any concrete in the reservoir. So they're backed up a bit, and they're 2.5 miles from the sea floor, and they're going to pump it in there. But if some of these holes in the well were even below that, they could pump concrete in there until they're blue in the face. All the pressure would do is push it up in the pipe, and what's below it would still be leaking and still be leaking out underneath the seafloor. So they're taking a chance. They're taking a gamble. They think this will work, and maybe it will. We'll find out. BP said it will begin forcing cement, Thursday. Many scientists, however, question both the rosy White House assessment and the administration's motives, timing, and record of estimating how much oil was flowing from the well. Yeah, that's all been a question from the beginning. The report says that less than half of the oil remains in the environment. About 26% of it remains as surface sheen or tar balls or other forms of oil. Well, I don't believe that for a minute, folks. I mean, from what they were saying, most of the oil was sunk. The only thing was the thin layer on the top. So the overwhelming majority of it was underwater, and they never admitted that anyway. So this is really just some more of the government and BP's baloney. About 16% was dispersed naturally, and another 8% was dispersed by the chemicals BP pumped into the surface of the Gulf and deep underwater at the source of the leak. Well, that's a lie. 8%, not according to the people that went down and took pictures of a column of oil from just underneath the surface all the way to the sea floor. How could it be 8%? It's got to be the highest percentage. It's got to be that underneath the water. So, and that's why the scientists are, you know, not believing them. Jane Lucchenko, NOAA, NOAA administrator, said at the White House news conference that much of the dispersed oil is in the process of relatively rapid degradation. White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs and the President's Energy and Climate Change Advisor, Carol Browner, joined Lucchenko at the White House briefing. President Barack Obama addressed the AFL-CIO on jobs, expressed optimism that the long battle to stop the leak and contain the oil is finally close to coming to an end. Early Wednesday, BP reported it had stopped the leak by pumping heavy drilling mud into the well shaft. Of course, they still didn't say anything about the cracks coming out of the seafloor with oil gushing out of them, which is reported by scientists, too. So the scientists and other experts who changed the government's conclusion warned that painting too rosy a picture could hamper the environmental monitoring and cleanup work that remains to be done in the Gulf. Marine conservationist Rick Steiner, a retired University of Alaska scientist, said, "Let's look at this another way, that there's some 50% of the oil left. It's still there in the environment." In other words, he's just, even if they were right, he's saying this is true. The truth is, I would guess that probably 90% of it's still left. But who am I to guess? But I, you know, if there's that much oil under the water, and the stuff, only the stuff that's on the surface can evaporate, you know, then it's probably still there. And the fish kill kind of points that out, I think, anyway. The government report also fails to account for the effect of vast underwater plumes of microscopic droplets of oil that remain unmeasured, scientists said, and it downplays the potential long-term effects of the release as much as 4.1 million barrels of oil in the Gulf of Mexico. Some 800,000 barrels were captured at the wellhead. The remaining 50% in the water is, again, in case, even if they were right, he's saying that would still leave 50% in the water. The remaining 50% in the water is the equivalent of almost 8 Exxon Valdez oil spills, until now the country's benchmark environmental disaster. Quote, now what we're hearing is they don't think the damage will be as bad as they initially thought, unquote, Steiner said. Quote, we have to remember that the same thing was said after the Exxon Valdez. But much of the damage didn't become apparent until the second or third year, unquote. Yes, there's a lot of damage still going to be done, folks. They're denying this, but it's going to happen. And the fisherman on that Fox report who went out and came back and said that there were no fish out there, they were not catching any fish and there were no fish out there, I think says a lot. Scientists also questioned the report's methodology. There is a lot of uncertainty in these figures, said James H. Cohen, Jr., a professor in the Department of Oceanography and Coastal Sciences at Louisiana State University. For example, the report doesn't explain how its author decided what was naturally dispersed oil and what was chemically dispersed oil. They gave no details on how they estimated the evaporation rate of oil, something that's difficult to do over large areas of seawater because of the effects of weather and other factors, Cowan said. Well, now, here's some of the scientists, folks, that haven't been bought off by BP, as Fox News did an article on just a little while back, that scientists were contacting them and telling them that BP was attempting to bring them into a contract which would put them under a confidentiality agreement for 3 years, so they couldn't speak up, trying to silence them. Okay, so they're continuing to do this. And then we have another one that's another article, which I'm not going to read. It says, Science World Skeptical at Oils, whatever. That was just a note there. Well, let me say this. Here's another article. Remember this, that a hurricane would spread the poison in the Gulf over the land. It's happening now without a hurricane. As I'm a firsthand witness, I believe God brought me to this place in the woods so that I could see it firsthand. You know, it's happening. It's happening now. And over a period of time, it's going to do a lot of poisoning of the groundwater, of the soil, of the trees, of the crops. Okay. Federal forecasters say peak of hurricane season will be busy. Well, you know, they've been missing it quite a lot here the last couple of years, but they're being very stubborn. They're saying, nope, the peak of the hurricane season is still going to be busy. Okay. And this is from the AP from Pensacola, Florida. It says, record high ocean temperatures and the development of a climate phenomenon known as La Nina will keep the Atlantic hurricane season on track to be the busiest since 2005, government forecasters said Thursday. Wow, they seem very confident of that. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration slightly lowered the outlook it released in May, but an above-normal season was still expected, said Jerry Bell, lead seasonal hurricane forecaster at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center in Washington. The updated forecast calls for 14 to 20 named tropical storms, down from a range of 14 to 23. The hurricane season started June 1st and ends November the 30th, but the peak period for hurricanes runs from August through October. 8 to 12 storms could become hurricanes, and 4 to 6 of those hurricanes could become major storms with winds of 111 miles per hour or more, forecasters said. Quote, August heralds the start of the most active phase of the Atlantic hurricane season, and with the meteorological factors in place, now is the time for everyone living in hurricane-prone areas to be prepared, NOAA Administrator Jane Lubchenco said in a statement. historically, during active storm season, multiple hurricane strikes are more likely for both the Gulf Coast and the East Coast in the United States. The Caribbean also sees a sharp increase in storm activity during such seasons, which is bad news for Haiti, where approximately 1.6 million people continue to live under tarps and tents nearly 7 months after a catastrophic earthquake wrecked its capital. Three named storms have developed since this hurricane season began. Hurricane Alex made landfall June the 30th in northern Mexico. Tropical Storm Bonnie forced crews drilling a relief well in the Gulf of Mexico to evacuate last month, but petered out. Tropical Storm Colin regenerated Thursday with 45-mile-an-hour winds over the open Atlantic, and said forecasters of the National Hurricane Center in Miami, tropical storm warning was issued for Bermuda. The May outlook, which called for 8 to 14 hurricanes with possibly 3 to 7 major hurricanes, reflected the possibility of even more storms forming in June and July than actually did, Bell said. Bell said the update is based on conditions indicating a high activity era that began in 1995 continues. The atmospheric and oceanic conditions now in place are very conducive to hurricane formation, and as we had predicted in May, he said. The Pacific Ocean climate phenomenon of La Nina developed in July, reducing wind shear in the Atlantic and making it easier for storms to take shape. Sea surface temperatures are exceptionally high and the warmest since 2005, when Hurricane Katrina and Rita ripped into the same part of the Gulf Coast, now coping with one of the world's worst oil spills. Historically, three named storms will extend into the Gulf of Mexico between August and November during above normal seasons, Bell said. Any impact on the oil remaining in the Gulf from an April 20th rig explosion off Louisiana would depend on a storm's strength and path across the water. Tropical storms are named when sustained wind speed reached 39 miles an hour. They became hurricanes when sustained winds reached 74 miles an hour. Major hurricanes blow at 111 miles an hour or more. The strongest hurricanes are labeled Category 5 with winds greater than 155 miles an hour. Three hurricanes developed out of nine tropical storms in 2009. None of the hurricanes made landfall in the USA. Hurricane Ida hit Nicaragua as a Category 1 storm in November. Colorado State University researchers said Wednesday they also expected this year's season to be more active than average, with 10 hurricanes, five of them major. Well, that's interesting. They seem very convinced, even though their last predictions were wrong, but they don't seem to be backing off any at all, do they? We're going to put on the site, I think Brad's going to put probably tonight, a bunch of articles from the Human Rights Examiner about censored Gulf news, with some of which are very interesting. I will say that we don't stand behind everything that they say there, but there's a lot of good information there and a lot of testimonies and witnesses there of what's really going on that we do believe is true. And so there are – let me just read this little thing here to you, and then we'll go on to something more important. Censored Gulf eyewitness testimonies of coughing up blood and other horror stories. Human Rights Examiner Deborah Dupre. What you can't smell can kill. If you smell Gulf toxins, you've been poisoned, says toxicologist Ott. He gives a list of names here to back him up. Coughing up blood is among horrors that eyewitnesses are reporting in South Louisiana, where BP medics diagnose the sudden widespread burning, itching skin, lesions, and marks as scabies or staph, as government health focus on stress and mental condition of millions of people that are poisoned with what scientists report is 11 times more lethal than crude oil toxins now in the Gulf and coastal water and air. Americans are still encouraged to eat Gulf seafood. Yes, and they don't have the foggiest idea. You can go out there and test here and you can test there, but you're not necessarily testing that fish. It comes through whatever's out there. It's crazy to think that they can test all the food in the Gulf. And these lesions and these other things are happening in itching skin and burning and rashes and all that stuff. That is happening to people who are wading out in the surf. On July the 29th, Global Justice Radio, blog talk radio program hosted by Reverend Terry T.K. O'Shannon, called Agent Orange Alert, listeners heard eyewitnesses and personal accounts of internal bleeding from orifices, including coughing up blood and nosebleeds. There was a call-in from a woman stranded and ill with rashes on her body, and she was calling for help. Callers described legs swelling, among other effects, since the oil explosion and lethal dispersant spraying operation. Project Gulf Impact report on Intelligence Hub that thousands of adults and children in South Louisiana are reporting scabs, lesions, and skin rashes. One woman preferred to remain anonymous, interviewed by the project, not only has this skin condition, but also aching bones, weight loss, stomach pains, inflammation in her leg, and styes developing in her eyes. Thousands in the Gulf suffer misdiagnosed skin lesions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Micah Walsh was a Gulf Coast volunteer in Grand Isle, Louisiana, for 4 weeks. She then received a heavy toxic exposure during a three-hour research team trip to Barataria Bay. Walsh explains, being unprepared for what she saw that day, the team went out to collect water samples. Walsh would not be alone in thinking that she would not witness what she did. Mainstream news is blanketing the world with reports that cleanup workers cannot find oil. Walsh explained that the Barataria Bay area of South Louisiana, where she went with the team, is heavily oiled. One of those researchers was soon coughing up blood. Let's see, here's an article. BP's well is still constantly leaking oil, nothing to see here, so on and so forth. All of these, everything that's said here is backed up with one article. Of course, I can't read all these articles, but they're backed up with quite a few articles. EPA analyst whistleblower Hugh Kaufman recently explained that we have dolphins that are hemorrhaging, people who work near it are hemorrhaging internally, and that's what dispersants are supposed to do. Walsh said that due to her toxic exposure symptoms, she needed to go somewhere right after the radio show for detoxing, but has no insurance. Barefoot doctors have since reported that they need a network of people of goodwill to offer a room in their homes for Gulf Coast volunteers to detox. During the program, listeners heard about using their sense of smell to judge severity of air quality and health impact. This is a dangerous myth. According to authors of Gulf Oil Spill Health Hazards, in some cases, volatile organic chemicals released from crude can be detectable by smell. But not all hazardous airborne chemicals have a detectable odor. The absence of oil odors does not mean there is no crude oil chemicals in the air. The authors highlight that children and adults with asthma and other respiratory health problems like COPD can experience serious health problems as a result of exposure to irritants, including those from oil spill chemicals below exposure rates the EPA claims could cause short-term health problems. COPD, that's chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, refers to chronic bronchitis and emphysema that commonly coexist. It is a serious lung disease that over time makes it hard to breathe, makes it hard to get air in and out. According to National Institute of Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute, when COPD is severe, shortness of breath and other symptoms can get in the way and even the most basic tasks such as doing light work, lighthouse work, taking a walk, washing, dressing. COPD is the fourth leading cause. I never knew this. Fourth leading cause of death in the United States and causes serious long-term disability. COPD kills more than 120,000 Americans each year. That's one death every 4 minutes. More than 12 million people are diagnosed with COPD. An additional 12 million likely have COPD and don't even know it. Well, listen, I got news for you that are suffering from this out there. If you believe the gospel, you can hold on to what the Word of God says and stand firm, and this stuff will leave you. It will leave you. You don't have COPD if you are a Christian and you believe the full gospel. You don't have it. The Word of God says, by whose stripes ye were healed. Believe it and be healed, okay? People such as Dr. Ricky Ott, an EPA analyst, Hugh Kaufman, have been alerting the public about Gulf Coast toxic dangers. Their alerts, however, have been muffled by the petrochemical military-industrial complex, TV, and the BP's PR campaign that shows no respect for human life, even most basic human rights. The Gulf PR campaign is thus far successful in that many Americans seem oblivious that genocide is being conducted on people of the South, of the Deep South. Eerily similar to the Germans who claimed not knowing Nazis were gassing Jews, gypsies, and the mentally ill. Dr. Ott has stated that if people remain in the Gulf Coast area, they need to be wearing respirators. No mention was made during the radio program about the volunteers nor the residents following Ott's advice about respirators. Let me read this part here. On the radio program, Layla Bixler stated that most people down in South Louisiana haven't the means to even get as far as New Orleans if they want to do so. She agrees that the rest of the public away from the coast are unaware of just how dangerous the toxins are that people are being exposed to the point that that fundraisers are solely to pay out-of-work fishermen. Bixler is part project in Louisiana's hard-hit Plaquemines Parish. Her organization, Human Helping Humans of Louisiana and the Earth, is a faith-based organization with a simple goal, help people help themselves. Speaks about the fishing community suffering. Is Gulf seafood safe? Gulf seafood safety is questioned not only in the Gulf Coast area, but nationally, since the Gulf provides seafood on the tables of Americans throughout the country. Seafood possibly tainted with dangerous poisons due to the prolonged use of chemical dispersants applied on oil flowing out of deep water horizons, oil well, and sprayed into the air. It's not just the dispersants, folks. It's the stuff in the oil itself. Okay. The government-BP partnership continues to lie that there is no public health crisis in the Gulf region and that the food web is not being altered. Yet the Louisiana tourist industry believes and promotes the dangerous cover-up. Scientists have reported early signs of the Gulf oil catastrophe altering the marine food web by killing or tainting some Gulf water creatures and increasing growth of others that thrive on fouled environments. In early July, an Imperial College in London study revealed that oil spills can block the ocean's natural ability to filter arsenic out of seawater. In late July, a Tulane University study revealed that samples of crab larvae from the area tested positive for hydrocarbons. The orange blobs found lodged in the bodies of tiny blue crab larvae collected from marshes that stretch from Texas to Florida appear to contain corexit. Not only are blue crabs a favorite Gulf food, other fish eat crab larvae. Representative Edward Markey tried contacting FDA Commissioner Margaret Hamburg to confirm Gulf seafood safety, but still hasn't heard back, according to Commissioner. Again, we're putting up some articles on the site to help people know about the real depth of this problem. And I've been watching it here, folks. I mean, last night I was thinking during the night, you know, that when I got up this morning, I was going to take a walk you know, down the driveway and or up the driveway and down the road a little bit, and just you know, pick a leaf off each tree as I reached out from the road, and I did that. I didn't duplicate anything, but I got a fistful of leaves here beside my desk that are just riddled with holes. And I want to tell you that I looked at these leaves, I looked at these trees on the top of the leaf, on the bottom of the leaf, and there was no bugs on these trees. In fact, there was a conspicuous lack of bugs. In fact, I think what's happening here may have happened also in Louisiana by the brethren down there who told me that the mosquitoes were dead. That just don't happen in Louisiana, folks. But on the Gulf, the mosquitoes were wiped out. And almost every tree I passed, with the exception of just a few, here's one I'm looking at right here. This is a bamboo shoot, and its leaves look perfect. And the pine trees don't seem to be affected. But almost all of the rest of them, and I've got a, you know, everything from cottonwood trees to bushes to everything. They're just chock full of holes. There seems to be two stages of this. First, whatever falls on the leaf just browns it out. It kills that part of the leaf. And then after a while, that piece falls out, and then there's a hole. Now, if you looked at it, if you didn't look on the same tree or bush and see that there are two stages of this, you might say, okay, some bug got on there and ate a hole in that leaf. But it would be, like in most cases, all the way to the top of the tree or the top of the bush. So that's a lot of bugs. And guess what? I couldn't find any bugs out there. This is the God's truth. I could not find any bugs out there. I thought, okay, what else could cause this? And the thing that popped into my head was slugs. Some of you from down south know about slugs, you know. Slugs crawl out of the ground. They crawl up as far as they can crawl during the night, to as high as they can crawl during the night. You know, slugs don't crawl very fast, right? And then they eat the leaves. And then they crawl back before the sunshine comes up good, because they don't hold up good in sunshine. So, but if you look at a big tall cottonwood tree and you notice the leaves are full of holes, you know slugs could not do that, because they couldn't have crawled that far in a week before they could get back to the ground. So no, there's nothing that really makes sense here, except that we've had two good rains since we left Pensacola here. Two good rains. And after both of them, I noticed serious damage. The first one took out all the ferns on the floor of the, and quite a few leaves got holes in the first time. And the second one did the same thing, basically. And I'm thinking, okay, that is just no chance. That I shared with you about the rock that I put a blanket over my car because the sunshine was shining into it, and a rainstorm was coming, so I went out there and took the blanket off, and I had a rock on the back of my trunk lid just to hold the blanket down so the wind wouldn't pick it up, and I took the rock and throwed it over on the ground, on the grass. And so the next day after the rainstorm, I thought, I'll go put this back on there. So I put the blanket back on there, reached down and grabbed the rock and picked the rock up, and immediately struck me in the face was that the green, pretty grass underneath that rock. And I looked all around the rock, and it was all brown around the rock. Nothing could have done that but the rain. Now, grass really gets, after, especially as dry as it's been, when you get a nice rainstorm, that grass just loves it. It goes crazy. Well, it was doing the exact opposite, folks. And I'll tell you something else. The animals around here are acting very strange. You can get in out of the rain, you know, if it's picking up the toxicity of the oil stuff that's evaporating up in the air and being burned and put up in the air and different things like that. You can get in out of the rain. Oh, by the way, we have on our site a few testimonies of people who were caught out in the rain and got sick almost immediately when they rained on heavily. Some were throwing up, some were having different other symptoms. That's interesting. That's like getting benzene on you. It will make you sick. And down the road, if you get too much of an exposure, it will just give you cancer. not you as a Christian. I'm talking about what's happening to the world. This is a great judgment that's falling upon the land in this area and all the way up to the north. I mean, we got testimonies from people from Ohio to the Gulf Coast and from the west side of Texas, from West Texas, all the way to the East Coast, that this is happening there too. So this is a major thing. It's going to continue to be a major thing, poisoning the ground, the water, the air, and the people. Okay? But let me tell you, this is really interesting. Let me tell you what I've noticed the last 3 days. Okay? First, I took a walk up the hill here. We're down on the side of a mountain here, right on the water, Lake Martin. And the road comes down from above, and you can walk up this road to the top up there, the very top, and there's a turnaround up there for cars to come in and turn around and go back. Since the little windy roads are all spread out through this area, they're just little windy roads, you know. Well, this is a big, wide turnaround and lots of crushed rock on the whole thing on the top of this hill. No trees for quite a ways because they were cut down the side of the hill this way and down the side of the hill that way. Not a lot of trees, a big open space. Okay? Well, I went up there a few days ago, and I heard a snort to my left, turned, and there was a deer turning and warning the deers behind him to leave, and the whole herd rushed off down the hill. What were they doing on the top of that hill? Why were they up there? Why were they on the edge of this rock turnaround, and where there were cars around, several cars around? I mean, it's, you know, deer like to stay away from people and people's things, you know, generally speaking. But so I questioned that. I thought, what are they doing here, you know? So the next day, I felt to take a walk up the hill. I walked up the hill to that same circle of crushed rock, that turnaround up on the top of the hill, and standing right in the middle of it is a great big gray fox. I mean, a big one. And he was staring at me just as I walked up there, and he didn't move at all. He just stood there looking at me like, okay, foxes are pretty wild. You know, why is his fear of man not overcoming, you know, him wanting to stand there in the middle, right in the middle, no trees anywhere around him, but right there at the top of that hill? Why is this happening? And then there was another one standing over on the edge, probably the mate, another large gray fox. They're real wild, okay. And then, just so happens, my daughter was coming back into the area from town, and she came up on the other side of the fox, and she stopped, and she just looked and watched this sight. Here, I'm looking at one side, and there, and she's looking at the other side, and wondering, okay, I haven't seen this before. Why are they standing there, you know? So they, in a few minutes, just I'd say 15, 20 seconds after she drove up there, they decided to leave, and they left, you know. I thought, what's going on here, Lord? Okay, then I had a third issue. I went to town yesterday morning, and these little windy roads back in here, they're just little narrow roads, and they wiggle in and out, and they go out to the main roads, of course. But every time we go in and out of these little windy roads, we're seeing turkey, we're seeing deer, crossing the road and stuff. They're moving. The creatures are moving, okay? And but that was the first day that I went out to the main highway. And you know, they cut the trees back a ways from the main highway, and these highways sometimes go down ridges. They try to make them go down ridges. Sometimes they have to go between mountains or something like that. But so this time I saw a couple of turkeys right on the side of the road. They didn't even move when I drove by, and there was a bunch of other little turkeys with them. And so I was telling my youngest son that today, as a matter of fact. He said, you know what? I saw the same thing. I saw two larger turkeys and a bunch of little turkeys out on the main highway. I says, well, I haven't seen them out there on the main highway before. Have you? He said, no, I never have. And I'm thinking, now what is overcoming a turkey's fear of man that they would come out of the woods where they love to hide? You know, foxes coming out of the woods where they love to hide, deer coming out of the woods where they love to hide, stay away from men. What's overcoming, what is more important to them than their fear of man now that causes them to do this? And the one thing that stuck in my head was, you know what, in the woods, there is a lot, probably a lot more of this smell. These creatures can smell. A fox in particular, and I'm sure the turkeys are the same way. Turkeys are so wily in the woods, you can't get close to them. And, you know, but I think they have a much stronger sense of smell than we do. I think dogs and foxes, of course, have hundreds of times stronger smell, senses of smell than we do. So what are they smelling when they're in the woods that they want to come to the highest point, the place where there's no trees? What causes them to go there? And if you think that's strange, let me point this out to you. I noticed that up there on that turnaround, there's not dog. I haven't seen a dog since we have come here. The only dog I've seen since we've come here going in and out of this deep woods area back out to the main highway is our own dog that we brought with us. I have never seen a dog. But on top of that turnaround, there is dung, animal dung, all different little piles all up there. It's like they must be going up there at night, standing in the middle of that turnaround and staying there. And my other son says, yeah, I noticed that too. That's strange, you know. Well, that wasn't that way when we first came here. Are these animals trying to get out of the woods because in the woods there's so much more exposure to the rain? Because the rain is on all the leaves, it's on the floor, but when you get up to the high point, there's more breeze going through there, there's no trees in order to retain the smell. Is it possible that these animals are trying to get away from this smell? That was the thing that popped in my head, and I believe the Lord put that there. So three different kinds of the wildlife here seem to have pointed that out to me. I'm wondering, you know, we, of course, can get away from the stuff. You know, they get rained on. They have to walk in it all the time. They are eating the leaves and stuff all the time. What is going to happen to the poor wildlife, folks? This is just really disturbing to me. I love the country, and I love God's creatures. That's just really disturbing to me to think about that, much less the people of God that are going through this, you know. But these creatures don't have any way to get out of it. It's really disturbing. This is part of the curse that Isaiah 24 is speaking about. You know, I'd like to look at Isaiah 24, but I want to say something to you. I give a lot of thought to these dreams and visions that the Lord has been giving us. And I'm convinced it's not over. It's quite clear from these that they're giving us a consistent message that it's not over. The easiest part of it is over. Now, we had the dreams like, the 20-foot black wave and then the 300-foot black wave, you know. Well, I'm convinced the 300-footer hadn't come yet, okay. Well, you know, the first dream that we had concerning this, I think, that I know of for sure, was about 3 years ago, and our elder Bill had it, and he saw what he called, or what the Lord showed him in the dream, was a linear black storm coming against the Gulf Coast. And he saw these circles of black coming, creeping up, you know, kind of like a wave action, up to the Gulf Coast. Well, it was a linear black storm. Well, we thought at the time, well, I don't know what that means, linear, for goodness sake, Lord, what does that mean? No. And then, of course, when it happened, we realized that it was a linear, not a physical storm, but a spiritual storm, a linear storm, because it was all on one parallel, you know, on the top of the water, coming up to the coast. Very interesting, right? Well, I thought, you know, I wonder if the 20-foot black wave obviously represented what we have had recently of the oil leak itself coming against the coast, I feel like that was the wave, since the wave doesn't have to be physical either. You know, a 20-foot wave might go 20 miles or so, but it ain't going to go much more than that. And the smell from it, you know, will go 20 miles from the beach when the wind's blowing, right? We've proven that, okay? So what about the 300 black wave, 300-foot black wave? Does that mean it's going to reach more people? Recently we had a dream. I think it was Kevin had this dream about a tsunami coming against the coast. It was 1,000 feet high, a black tsunami, and that explosions were happening underneath the waves, which, as you know, is not possible if the waves are literal waves. So I'm guessing that the 1,000-foot wave is not a literal wave, but that it's going to reach a lot more people. As you know, a 1,000-foot tsunami would reach a lot more people than a 20-foot tsunami, right? So, but I believe that it's talking about what is going through the air right now and reaching out to the country. And the things I pointed out to you and other people have witnessed about how far-reaching this thing is. Now, this toxin is raining on the forests, you know, at least up until Ohio, I've had witnesses of. This is very interesting. I'm thinking that the last wave may have already started. I'm not denying the fact that a hurricane could come up in here at any time and really do a really bad number on the whole country, the whole eastern part of the country. Or that there could be an explosion. They could make a mistake out there, you know, with the well, whatever. I don't know. That could happen too. However, let me say this, that we recently received another video of BP's own footage of the ocean floor rising up and just slumping back down, like you pulled the air out of a balloon. The camera actually watched it come up and watched it just slump down, like a bubble had just been burst and went out somewhere. It relieved itself somewhere. And one of the people that sent that video also stated that they'd seen this happen several times. And as you know, we've already got that on the site from way back when this first happened, of a picture looking across at the riser, and the ocean floor itself raised up and blew out between the camera and the riser. We had that picture on the site. We just put this other one on there too. So the visions of this blowout of and sinking of the ocean floor that we've had, it may happen in a way like it's happening now, over and over and over, or it could happen in a major blowout. At any rate, I'm thinking that the big wave is upon us, because this thing is reaching an awful lot more people than on the Gulf Coast now. At this moment, it is reaching a lot more people. It is reaching their environment. It is poisoning their environment. It is getting in their lungs. It is spreading, folks. It's not getting better, and it's not over. It's spreading, and it's getting worse. And I'm not just saying that to make you fear. I'm saying that so you can do something about it, because you can do something about it. You can warn the poor lost people out there that don't know anything about this curse and that aren't listening to God. We've had the inside track, because God's been speaking to us about this thing for some time, right? He's been telling us about it, what's coming, and so on and so forth. And so, at any rate, the Lord's been warning us. And I want to share just a piece of Isaiah 24 with you, okay, concerning this curse that we see coming upon the land. It says, "Behold, the Lord maketh the earth empty, and maketh it waste, and turneth it upside down, and scattereth abroad the inhabitants thereof." I'm telling you, he's scattering inhabitants even now. People are leaving the Gulf Coast still. And some are probably going back because they've been convinced that it's all over. Well, it ain't over, folks. It's not over. "And it shall be, as with the people, so with the priest, as with the servant, so with his master, As with the maid, so with her mistress, and as with the buyer, so with the seller. As with the creditor, so with the debtor. In other words, it's crossing all manner of people. This curse that we're talking about is truly doing that too. It's crossing all quarters of people. The earth shall be utterly emptied and utterly laid waste, for the Lord hath spoken this word. The earth mourneth and fadeth away. The earth languisheth. Now, I'm not saying that this particular local judgment is the completion of all of what we're reading here, but what we're reading here is the whole picture of what's going to happen between here and the end. And basically the curse of one form or another is going to devour the whole earth. The earth mourneth and fadeth away. The earth languisheth and fadeth away. The lofty people of the earth do languish. The earth also is polluted under the inhabitants thereof. This is happening. And why? Well, it says, because they have transgressed the laws, violated the statutes, broken the everlasting covenant. Yes. So even the natural laws, greedy men have, tried to cut corners. And you think that's the only reason that this curse has come upon us? I mean, everybody's out there blaming BP because they made all these mistakes. But I'm going to tell you something. A man can receive nothing except it come from heaven. That's what the Bible says. This is not coming just because of greedy BP people. It's coming because the people have broken the everlasting covenant. They've violated the statutes. Therefore, hath the curse devoured the earth. And they that dwell therein are found guilty. Therefore the inhabitants of the earth are burned, and few men left. I was reminded of this burned when in Song of Solomon, chapter 1, verse 5 and 6, about the Shulamite, saying that she was burned with the sun and scorched with the sun. She was dark and swarthy, she said. And I thought, that's a timing for the bride to be coming forth at this time when it seems that the UV is 11, which is way, way up there. You know, it's about twice what it normally is. And it's so easy to get suntan now. I can tell you that, folks. some of us are kind of darkened here, you know. Let's see, it goes on to say, the new wine mourneth, the vine languisheth, all the merry-hearted do sigh. I can tell you this, I looked at the muscadine vines, I pulled leaves off the muscadine vines, and they're diseased right along with the rest of it. There's lots of muscadine, wild grapevines over here. The mirth of tabrets ceaseth. The noise of them that rejoiceth endeth. The joy of the harp ceaseth. They shall not drink wine with a song. Strong drink shall be bitter to them that drink it. The waste city is broken down. Every house is shut up, that no man may come in. There is a crying in the streets because of the wine. All joy is darkened. The mirth of the land is gone. In the city is left desolation, and the gate is smitten with destruction. Some of these things about the cast down heart of the people are like dreams that we've had before, that told us of the future times in America. And we're headed that way, folks. For thus shall it be in the midst of the earth among the peoples, as the shaking of the olive tree, as the gleanings when the vintage is done. Of course, God's people are going to bear fruit in the midst of all this. In fact, he goes on to say here in verse 14, these shall lift up their voice. They shall shout for the majesty of the Lord. They shall cry aloud from the sea. Wherefore glorify ye the Lord in the east, even the name of the Lord, the God of Israel. in the isles of the sea, from the uttermost parts of the earth. We have heard songs, glory to the righteous. You know, that's very interesting, folks. Now, Romans chapter 8 says this. Let me read this to you. 18. For I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed to us. And he's talking about, of course, the glory of the Lord being manifested in his people in a time of suffering, right? For the earnest expectation of their creation waiteth for the revealing of the sons of God. This is the glory that we're reading about there in Isaiah 24. For the creation was subject to vanity, not of its own will, but by reason of him who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself shall be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the liberty of the glory of the children of God. You know, the creation, not just man, but the creation itself, came under this curse because of man's sin. The curse came upon creation because, in the beginning, of course, because Adam sinned. And even today, we read in Isaiah 24, it's telling us the exact same thing, that the curse, the whole earth is going to be devoured by the curse because men have departed so far from his covenant and his statutes. And so he goes on to say here, for we know that the whole creation groaneth and travaileth in pain together until now. Not only so, but we ourselves also, we have the first fruits of the Spirit. Even we ourselves groan within ourselves, waiting for our adoption, to wit, the redemption of our bodies. You know, folks, I believe we're going to really appreciate the kingdom of God before this is over. We flee there for safety, don't we? We flee there to be delivered from the curse that's coming upon all mankind. And as we flee, we take on the glory of the Lord Jesus Christ. That's the great thing, is that this is driving us to him, you know, and going to cause many to repent. Don't try to pray it away. You can pray it away for you. You can pray it away for your loved ones. You can, you have authority over the curse in your life because you're a believer. If you are a true believer and have repented of your selfish ways and have turned to God. I'm going back to Isaiah 24 and read just a little bit more. It says, But I said, I pine away, I pine away. Woe is me, the treacherous have dealt treacherously. Yea, the treacherous have dealt very treacherously. Yeah, you know, the resources of the earth just go just so far. And the curse is going to devour them. And the people that are left, of course, are going to fight over the resources. Nations are going to fight over the resources. People are going to be crooked. They're going to steal, you know, because obviously the prosperity and the provisions of the past are going to end up going down the drain, folks. It says, fear in the pit and the snare are upon thee, O inhabitant of the earth. It shall come to pass that he who fleeth from the noise of the fear shall fall into the pit. And he that cometh up out of the midst of the pit shall be taken in the snare. For the windows on high are opened, and the foundations of the earth tremble. Oh, we're going to see a lot of that in the future, folks. The earth is utterly broken, and the earth is rent asunder, and the earth is shaken violently. This is some of the things that are going to happen, I believe, towards the other end of the tribulation period, because of Planet X and other things that are happening upon the earth. The earth shall stagger like a drunken man and shall sway to and fro like a hammock, and the transgression thereof shall be heavy upon it. There it is again. The transgression thereof shall be heavy upon it, and it shall fall and not rise again. Yep, this curse is going to continue. It's not just going to be the oil. It's going to be many other things, famines and earthquakes and so on and so forth, just as we spoke about earlier. And it shall come to pass in that day that the Lord will punish the fruit punish the host of the high ones on high, and the kings of the earth upon the earth, and they shall be gathered together as prisoners are gathered in the pit, and shall be shut up in the prison, and after many days shall they be visited. Of course, that's the great white throne judgment. After many days they shall be visited. Then the moon shall be confounded, and the sun ashamed, for the Lord of hosts will reign in Mount Zion and in Jerusalem, and before his elders shall be glory. Hallelujah. God is rebuilding his Jerusalem, folks. This is obviously the end of time. This prophecy is about the end of time. This has never been fulfilled. It's going to be completely fulfilled in our day. But this curse is going to devour the earth. But God is going to glorify his saints. Praise the Lord.